Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Wing House. In the back room, you have a live podcast going out around the world. It is called the What the Pewter Report. It is the joining of What the Buck and Pewter Report. Mark Cook is currently changing out headphones. Mine were insufficient. He says he looks like an air traffic controller. I want to welcome you to the Wing House tonight. I want to welcome KBR as well. KBR is in the house, our sister crew, Gasparilla crew. If you wonder what we're doing, we are a bunch of Bucks fans that get together and do some sort of, I like to think it's actually kind of amazing stuff, the amount of charity stuff that goes on between KBR and between What the Buck. If you have any questions about that, feel free to ask anyone in a logoed shirt and we'll tell you about it. But tonight, we are going to be talking all about the Bucks. And to do that, you want to have the authority on the Bucks, and we happen to have that in Mark Cook, editor-in-chief. If he keeps messing with my controls, though, I'm going to kill him. But we've got Mark Cook here live from PewterReport.com. As soon as he gets a headphone in that works, we will actually talk to him about what's going on over at One Buck Place. Between now and then, we're going to review what happened with the New Orleans Saints game. I actually was fortunate enough. Hold on, guys.
Good thing this isn't live.
Ironically, before you started messing with it, everything was working great.
Yeah, it was working good. Could you turn me up a little bit in my ear? There you go.
All right, Mark, are you on the mic now? Are you good?
Yeah, I got a droopy mic, though, which at my age I'm familiar with.
We have a screwdriver behind you, but you should just look better and it'll stay up. Anyway, Mark Cook from Pewter Report. We're going to talk a little bit about the Saints game, then we're going to look forward to the Ravens game as well. If you guys have questions, like I mentioned before the show, if you have questions you want to ask either one of us or to the council in general, feel free to write them down and bring them up here. We also have an open mic. We bring this mic every week for Skip Brown, but Skip Brown never wants the mic.
Downtown.
But if Skip wants the mic this week, he's welcome to step up into the mic this week. So, hot topics this week, Mark, we'll talk about, but I first want to do a little bit of house cleaning.
Okay.
Last month, the What the Buck and KBR group was raising money for the One Voice Foundation, which is a local organization here that raises money for pediatric cancer research as well as support for the families going through the all of the process around treatment for pediatric cancer, et cetera. We raised money over two tailgates and two watch parties as well as an online auction, and I'm proud to let people know that the efforts raised just over $4,100 for the One Voice Foundation. So we'll be giving them a check. Either later this evening or this weekend for $4,100. And then this month, we are doing half of the month for the Making Strides for Breast Cancer via KBR. That's why you see a lot of the pink shirts roaming around here. As well as on the second half, we'll be doing the Spring of Tampa, which is a domestic abuse group right here in Tampa, to help victims of domestic abuse, both the direct victims as well as the families thereof. So if you'd like to get involved in that, please do let us know. We can certainly find a way to leverage your resources, whether they be cash, hands, or otherwise. With that being said, let's kick off the Saints. Mark, why don't you give us a review from a Pewter Report perspective about that Saints loss, that sad Saints loss?
Well, you kind of had a feeling that it was coming. You know, I mean, certainly right off the bat, the Buccaneers were fortunate to hold them to field goals, not fall too far behind. You can't do that with Drew Brees. Then they got that lead. They got things clicking with the offense, four straight drives, scoring points. And did real well. But then towards the end, you kind of saw the end and the crumble and the total meltdown there in the fourth quarter, certainly down around in their own end zone when they kept making continuous mistakes. And certainly the penalties are the big thing. Lovie Smith talked about it. The players said it all day, all week in the locker room, that they've got to correct those type of situations. And, you know, the first rule, it's a dumb rule, but it's a cliche rule. Derek, don't beat yourself, right? I mean, that's the number one thing teams say, coaches say. They repeat it often. Unfortunately, that's exactly what Tampa Bay did with 15 penalties for 374,000 yards or something like that. Anyway, so unfortunately, they lost 1-4 on the season. That was a game they could have had. There were a couple more games this year. I mean, you look at the first two games, easily one of those two games should have been a win, if not both of them. You win that Saints game, all of a sudden it's a 4-1 record, not a 1-4 record. But it doesn't matter on what could have been. It's all about what the reality of it is. And the reality of it is right now, they're a 1-4 football team and got a tough, tough Baltimore team coming into Tampa Bay on Sunday at 1 o'clock. But I think they have a chance. I'm not ruling them out of that completely. I think there's a possibility they can win that football game. But there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to happen for the Buccaneers to win that game.
Mark, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to adjust this sound because people are having trouble hearing. Now, fortunately, there's a nice crowd here at Wing House, which is great. For you guys listening on the podcast or in the chat room, you're going to give us probably about 5 to 10 minutes. I'm going to screw with the technology here, see if we can get the sound a little bit better for the people that are in attendance.
Will I get paid overtime? Hear us.
You'll get paid exactly what you're worth, which means you're going to have to leave money on the table.
Nice.
So we'll be right back in about 5 to 10 minutes, guys. Bear with us. You guys eat, enjoy yourselves. We'll get this fixed up. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Thanks for the patience, guys. Sorry for the problem. You know, sometimes it's bubblegum and toothpicks, but we get it done. We were just discussing a little bit. Mark was going into some nice fill-in time while I was screwing with the technology. I appreciate that, Mark. That's the mark of a true pro.
Terrible.
No, it was the mark of a true pro about the Saints game. Now, I was fortunate enough to be there.
Yeah, you were fortunate enough to be there.
I was fortunate to be in the Superdome.
How much weight did you gain on that trip? Because every time I looked on Facebook, there was another plate of food stuffed beyond belief.
Well, what was interesting about that, and I appreciate you mentioning that, the only guy who's eaten at this desk this evening.
We only ate enough for both of us last weekend.
We only ate like one meal a day, but they were like that. We ate a little bit of breakfast and some in dinner, but I do appreciate you worrying about the reason
you ate a little bit of breakfast is because you were hungover from all the drinks the night before. You probably didn't get up till noon.
What I'm hearing is a lot of bitterness. That's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely.
A lot of bitterness.
Total jealousy, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I've never been to New Orleans.
My God.
I've been to Mobile before. That's just 90 miles away, Cheryl.
Cheryl's not listening to you. She doesn't care what you're talking about. She's too busy yakking with Tracy right now.
No one listens to us.
No, no one does. At any rate, in New Orleans, it was interesting. And Mark, I want to give you a little bit of this perspective. In the crowd, a great New Orleans crowd, a crowd that I think actually dramatically impacted that game. You talk about that 12th man all the time, and that drive that was just an abortion of a drive, that crowd impacted the game.
I was reading your tweets, and you were nailing it. You were live tweeting during the game, and you credited the crowd a couple times, and you're absolutely right. Right after you mentioned that, the safety happened.
Oh, absolutely. And it was nuts. But in that crowd, I had a very knowledgeable fan behind me, young lady, super smart, knows the game. It's always I'm always happy when I go to an away game and you get one of those fans behind you. And at first,
Saints fan or Bucs fan?
A Saints fan. Right. A Saints fan. And at the beginning, there's a little bit of chippiness. You're figuring out whether you're a good fan, bad fan, et cetera. But by third quarter, we were talking back and forth. In fact, on the Colston incompletion, and I still haven't been able to go back and watch it because real time, to me, that looked like a catch and a fumble.
It was a catch. There's no doubt.
That kills me. And I looked at her. I couldn't even look back at the big screen. I said, I got to ask you, was it a fumble or was it incomplete? I got my fan glasses on. She goes, I think it was incomplete. And I thought, oh, my God. But during the game, the Saints fans are done with Drew Brees. They were actually happy that they ran the ball. They didn't want to put the game in Drew Brees' hand. And I'd never heard that in my life. And I sat here and thought about the misery that we have with quarterback controversy year after year after year. And now they're starting to have one in freaking New Orleans. There were people calling for guess who? Luke McCown.
No.
I'm not kidding.
I think most Buccaneer fans would take 371 yards, even if there is three interceptions to go along with that. Because if you're throwing the ball for 371 yards, you know, that's nearly a country mile, right? I mean, that's all over the place. I don't remember the last Buccaneer to go 371. Glennon had 302 in Pittsburgh. If I thought a little bit more, I could probably come up with something, but it's been a long time since we've seen a quarterback approaching that at all.
Well, and the yards aren't really that big a deal, right? The question becomes how many points do you put up and whether you win the game.
The thing is, if you're throwing for nearly 40 yards, you're going to, even if you try not to score, eventually you're going to score. That means someone's catching the ball long, deep balls.
You run into the end zone eventually.
You don't throw 371 yards of, you know, 5-yard curls.
And if you do, you have to have the ball, I don't know, maybe 86 plays. Oh, wait, that's exactly what the Saints had.
Yes.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, you know, looking backwards, what happened in New Orleans. There's some good things. And are what the Buck guys know this? I'm not sure on the Peter Report boards what your fans are with regards to the separation between the Glennon guys and the McCown guys. My point has always been this, and I think you've heard me say it before. I believe that McCown is still the better quarterback. But Glennon is the quarterback now, and I think that Glennon had his best game as a Buccaneer in New Orleans. He has shown tremendous improvement, and right now, you ride that hot hand. For once, in recent history, we're not that worried about that. But the running game, and I know that there was an article, I think it was Scott's SR5, Fab 5, talking about Doug Martin. Doug Martin has become a galvanizing force. Our own Skip Brown, sitting right here in a very handsome blue V-neck. He's ready to call Doug Martin out of the game. What are your thoughts about the running game in Tampa? Because in my opinion, the difference in that game wasn't the penalties. They hurt. The difference was when we needed a first down on the ground, we couldn't get it. And when they wanted to run, they could.
I The penalties were the story of the game. Not only the 145 yards they cost the team going backwards, but how about the 82 that they cost going forward?
Oh, yeah. They hurt.
And that adds up at a bunch. But as far as the running game goes, there's no question. I mean, you got to be able to run the football. You can't be one-dimensional in this league. It's very difficult to do. And they've got to find a way to do it. And from talking to the offensive linemen and some of the coaching staff and even some people off the record, they think they're a lot closer than maybe what the average fan thinks when they see it. Because to us, it looks like, I mean, there were times in that game against New Orleans when Javorski Lane was stopping before he hit the hole because there was penetration. When your fullback is stopping before he gets to the line of scrimmage, you know your running back's got nowhere to go. I'm almost to the point now where you scrap the fullback completely because you remember Barry Sanders? He hated running with a fullback. He just got in his way.
We don't have Barry Sanders.
Well, I agree with that. That's a very good point. But at the same time, if you're going to get blown up and you're going to give up, you know, that's another guy that, and essentially Doug Martin and Bobby Rainey, another guy they have to miss, right?
Yes.
If Javorski Lane is not creating a hole, he's in the way of the hole.
No, that's true.
So, you know, but I'm still a believer in Doug Martin. I don't think he forgot how to run the football. Now, listen, let's go back to Doug Martin's rookie year. He started the season off slow, had 90 yards in that first game, his rookie first game against Carolina. Came back with 85, 70, 60. He always had the big 145-yard games or the 48-yard games. You know what I mean? There wasn't a lot of those mid-range type things. And that's just a lot of times dictated on what teams decide to do. New Orleans was determined to stop the run and make Glennon beat him. And he almost did.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you watch that game, there was a lot of run blitzes. They were bringing safeties up. Linebackers were blitzing, you know, guessing the holes just right. My question is, and I brought it up to Marcus Arroyo, is what did you see that you didn't think you could run to the outside? Because where was the tough sweeps? Now, we don't see a lot of those in this offense, but occasionally you do. The Buccaneers ran a couple of those against Pittsburgh the week before with Rainey. You know, when you are getting stuffed inside the tackles, between the tackles, you know, what's it going to hurt to try and get outside a little bit? And I think in hindsight, Marcus Arroyo, looking back at it, would say, you know what, we maybe should have attacked that. But what he said is you go into a game with a game plan, you think you can run between the tackles, and you keep pushing at that because you think eventually you're going to break one. I don't know how smart that is. To me, that's part of those adjustments that we always talk about. If it's not working, I mean, you can't continually beat your head up against a concrete wall, and that's kind of what the Buccaneers did in that game against the Saints, because there just was not any running room at all.
Well, and one of the things in the running game, we talked about this a little bit off air, and I know that a lot of fans don't necessarily pay attention to this because they don't need to. You know, they think you can just replace a running back and magically everything gets better. That's the salve that makes everything work. With the Bucs choosing to go zone blocking, and we tried to do this once before under the ill-fated Jeff Jagodzinski. It was Jeff, right? I remember Jagodzinski. Zone blocking is choreography. We talk about this on What the Buck all the time. If one guy misses his block, misses his zone, because it's not a person, then someone's coming away free, and your play is beaten. Now, what's interesting is Steve White said that we actually ran Power O once. Now, Power O is a man-blocking play, right? And we gained 9 yards.
Right.
Man-blocking is easier in some ways.
No, it's not. In some ways, it is easier.
If you're not strong, it's not easier.
Well, I agree. But listen, if you're 300 pounds, and that's the average weight of this offensive line, You remember the fat kids in school?
I remember them. Shit, I looked in the mirror.
What I'm going to say is here, not trying to offend you, is you were stronger in school just based on your size. I mean, if you're carrying around that much weight, you're carrying around some muscle in there too, all right? Your sheer size is going to bull your way through certain situations. So as far as athletic and okay, can Anthony Collins bench 400 pounds? I like the agility in the zone blocking, and I think they've got some linemen that can do that, but I don't know that they have the perfect blend of offensive linemen for the zone blocking, nor for, like you say, the power man-on-man type blocking. They have kind of an in-between both. They don't really have the perfect blend of one or the other. Does that make any sense?
It does, and sadly, as I reference the Karate Kid almost all the time, as Mr. Miyagi said...
The one
said,
with Will Smith's son or the old one?
No, the real one.
Okay.
Either Karate Do Yes or Karate Do No.
Right.
Karate Do So-So, Squish Like Grape. You either zone block and get good at it, or you power man block and get good at it.
Here's the thing that blew my mind in that game. In that fourth quarter, in that meltdown situation, who was on the field at guard?
I don't remember.
Garrett Gilkey.
Was there an injury?
There was no injury. They had been subbing series with these guys.
Were they gassed after those 27 offensive plays we were able to amass?
I asked about that too. No, actually, Roy asked about it. I was going to. What's going on there? I mean, we talk about continuity on the offensive line. Right. You and I both agree no unit needs continuity more to be successful than an offensive line. Those five guys have to work in unison or it doesn't work. You can have one guy on the defensive line screw up and Gerald can make up for it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Same thing with Levante at linebacker, maybe even Banks or Werner in the secondary. But if the offensive line, as you said, one guy screws things up, you're done. So why in the crucial situation to me was Garrett Gilkey in? Now, here's the deal. Here's what our good friend Yuccaneer, that's who he goes by on our board.
Oh, my man Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson.
He's in the chat room right now, actually.
Jimmy made a great point. By the way, he sent me another fantastic breakdown. I used some of it today on some of my questions, but thank you for that, by the way. By the way, the Buccaneers ran nickel and base. I mean, they ran their nickel and their base defense almost 50-50. It was like 51 to 48.9 in that game. They blitzed. So far this year, they've blitzed almost 40% of the time. In the mid-30s. That's something that never happened under Monty Kiffin. But let's get away from that. Anyway,
sure.
Good stats, Jimmy. Thank you for that, Yuck. But he said what it is on the silent snap count, Gilkey is the one who actually signals, taps Evan Dietrich Smith to make that snap. So he, and essentially, if I'm not mistaken, what he's saying is Gilkey's the one that screwed that up. Not Vincent Jackson being late going in motion, not Glennon calling for the snap. It was a combination, really, of a mistake by Gilkey. And you saw, now you may not have saw because you were in the stands, but on the TV broadcast and watching it on the All-22, Mike Glennon showed the most demonstrative anger I've ever seen in that game when he was chewing Garrett Gilkey's ass out.
Yeah, you could see it live, too. You could see it live.
He was pissed.
The thing that's amazing
but
to me.
But why is he in there? You've got Amome who started every game, who you're trying to build continuity to with, and all of a sudden you're going to throw Gilkey in here who showed up 1 week before the season opened.
What did the coaches say? You asked the question, or Roy asked the question. What was the answer?
Coach speak. Well, you know, we're trying to find the best combination, and, you know, they're both doing a good job. That was the exact quote.
That's
I can pull up the exact
shit.
Quote, but it wasn't a good enough answer.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, and I actually argued this point, because now you say you played offensive line.
Right.
Okay. Amazingly enough, I didn't. When I've watched teams in loud conditions, I've seen that tapping of the leg before, right? And
right.
Usually there's some sort of a code there that lets you know the delta between
right.
the tap. Because if you just tap and then they snap and tap and then they snap, you might as well give people your snap count.
Sure.
That's ridiculous. But in those situations, if that was the case, that's an interesting cluster that occurred. But what I didn't understand, in that moment, you know the crowd's going to be into it. You're back against the wall before the first penalty, right? Before the second penalty. That's when you have to put it on the table and say, our guys, our 11, are going to beat your 11.
Right.
We're not going to try and get cute. We sure as hell are not going to try and make any checks at the line. Poor Mike Glennon, for that noise, his ability to actually make those checks
sure.
and get across was phenomenal. He earned a lot of credit in my book. Not that he's trying to, but he earned a lot of credit in my book for being able to do it. I don't want him to have to. I almost want you to say, listen, go Steve White style. We're running power O three
right.
times.
Right.
We may not even huddle, guys.
Right. But let's go back to what happened on that play.
Sure.
DeMar Dotson holding penalty. Negates a first down right out of the gate. Backs the Buccaneers up. Now it's first and 20. Then they proceed to go back. It was classic Buccaneer meltdown football
oh, yeah.
that we've seen since 1976 from time to time. And here's something, and this is kind of getting off topic a little bit, but the one thing, game management by Lovie Smith has been in question. He's going to be ultra-conservative. We know that. Number one, you call a timeout after that fumble with Lewis Murphy. You let the replay boot because you can't challenge. It's inside 2 minutes. But you call a timeout so they can look at it and make that determination. Now, chances are the ball's going to be at the 35-yard line. You're not going to have much time. You probably don't go down and kick a field goal. Who knows what happened? The problem was they blew the whistle, so Werner couldn't advance the fumble once he picked it up. Because had he been able to do that, he was at least in Saints territory.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if not scoring on that play. But again, in that situation, we all saw the Buccaneer offense start to melt down after that holding penalty, right? We all had a feeling, O.S., we know what's going to happen here, right?
Absolutely.
Easy to Monday morning quarterback and now Friday night quarterback, call a timeout. You could tell your guys were scrambled. You could see the looks on their faces. They felt the pressure of what was going on right there, too. Why not call a timeout? Take a few seconds and regroup. Now, the second timeout that I would have taken was on that last drive in overtime. What in the hell are you saving timeouts for? And you see that your guys are giving up gashing, runs, screen passes. take a timeout. Give these guys a breather, if nothing else. Even if you're not going to make an adjustment in what you're doing defensively, at least give them that breather. Again, timeouts mean nothing taking them to the locker room. You don't get any points. You don't get to carry them over to the next game. Those are some little nuances that frustrated me with that game also when I went back and looked at it.
And this has been a persistent gripe about Coach Smith. Now, I have a lot of respect for Coach Smith. I think he does a lot of things right. And different games you'll see player or coaches like that, not just in football. I know Coach Krzyzewski at Duke is different in the way he handles his timeouts.
Right.
He wants his guys to play through runs. He doesn't want to call his timeouts whereas normally a coach will. But
he knows his guys.
He knows his guys.
He knows his guys.
Yeah.
Lovie doesn't know these guys. He should know these guys a little bit more, I think, than he does. And again, I'm not complaining. Look, you know, as we've always said, me and you sit here and we're geniuses, right, behind the mic. We're Hall of Fame coaches. Fact is, Lovie Smith, Greg Schiano, Raheem Morris has forgotten more about football than we'll ever know. We'll admit to that. We don't know everything.
True story.
And so, you know, I'm not sitting there complaining, but when you look back on things, but the thing about Lovie Smith, I'll say this. I bet you if he also looking back at it would also say those same things. Maybe I should have done things a little bit differently.
I don't know that he would about timeouts. This has been something because my friends in Chicago said the same thing. The guy doesn't ever use timeouts.
Here's the deal. Here's the thing. I think it was NFL Philosophy who maybe tweeted this the other night, last night's game, as a matter of fact, because, which coach was it that should have called a timeout? Maybe O'Brien? I can't remember. Last night's game, anyway. I think it was NFL Philosophy who said, here's a novel idea. Why don't you have a game manager coach? That's what he does. He's either up in the booth or he's on the sideline. His job isn't to coach any players. His job isn't to make sure the chin straps are tight. His job is to be aware, timeouts, what the situation is. A situational coach, maybe that's what he tweeted out.
Right.
And I think that would be very beneficial. When I coached some high school football, I was on the JV squad, but on Friday nights I helped the varsity, and that's one of the things I did up in the booth. Keep track of timeouts. Okay, do we go for two here? I had the chart. Those kind of things, you know what I mean? Are you going for one? Are you going for two? It's 3 minutes left in the third quarter. No, we go for one here because if they score again and you miss their – you know what I mean? You understand all of that.
Absolutely.
You know, you got the budget. You got the budget to have that guy. And maybe there is somebody designated for that job, but if there is, he's not doing a very good job of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's something you have to ask Coach Smith when you're doing your magical stuff.
I probably won't ask him that.
All right, so you look at the Saints and you think, okay, well, a couple of good takeaways. This is a team that I think a lot of people are afraid we're going to run away with the game. In fact, the Saints fans were talking a little bit of noise before the game that they were going to run away with it, though they're very good fans. It's a great experience when you go to New Orleans. But we got in there, got behind, came back, had the lead. You had an 11-point lead with 12 minutes and 13 seconds left.
Twice you had an 11-point lead. Not once.
I was just talking about the last one.
I know. I understand.
Right. The last one, 11 points, 12-13. You get that done. You stop the two-point conversion. And when that happens, I go, that's the game. That's the difference maker right there. Stopping that two-point conversion just saved our bacon. And then the cataclysmic event occurred. We come away from that game going, we can throw the ball. Our receivers intermittently can catch the ball. Had our receivers caught the ball better, Mike Glennon may have broken a passing record or two for the Bucs. ASJ drops two great passes.
By the way, remember last week, my sword or skull of the week, my breakout offensive MVP guy?
Yeah.
Who did I pick?
ASJ, wasn't it?
Yes, and he dropped the third down pass in the first drive and just went downhill after that.
Yeah,
so
it was all downhill.
Don't listen to me when I make those picks.
Well, and one thing I did like is they went back to him later in the game. You've got to go back to him.
But did you see that he started the game? They were definitely going to try and utilize this
guy,
as we talked about, you know, through across the middle. But if somebody would have told you before that game the Buccaneers were going to have three interceptions, 11 pass breakups, they were going to score 31 points, and Jimmy Graham wasn't going to play for three and a half quarters. You think that's a win?
I think that's got to be a win. Now, let's train our guns forward. Let's stop looking backwards so much. Let's look forward. We got the Ravens coming into town. I think everyone knows what the Ravens bring to town. His name is Joe Flacco. The defense isn't what it used to be, but AFC, they play some defense now.
They are a great defense.
They play some defense.
They're a great, great scoring defense in particular.
Opportunistic.
Yeah.
Now, Flacco, it is alleged, has a pretty strong arm.
Oh, he can throw the ball.
Our safeties, despite what they may say in the news, are not necessarily always in position. I happen to be pretty afraid of what Joe Flacco may be able to do against our secondary. What are your thoughts looking at this game?
Well, number one, Steve Smith has been a Bucs killer his whole career. We know that back to his Carolina days. And this guy's on a mission this year to make Carolina, you know, pay for, in a sense. You know, he's got that chip. Look, Steve Smith walks around. He was born with a chip on his shoulder.
Absolutely.
He probably smacked the doctor when the doctor smacked him. He's just an angry man. But he plays football angry. And, you know, this is a guy I think that's going to be crucial to bottle him up and make some of these other receivers beat him if it's going to happen. You know, they run the ball efficiently. Flacco's a pretty smart quarterback. He's an elite quarterback as far as pay scale goes. He's got the same Super Bowl rings as Peyton Manning and Drew Brees. He's got one. So translated that into, what, $107 million or some obscene amount of money. So
he got very fortunate that year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And I think he can still thank the Denver Broncos for that total
Absolutely.
Collapse for that happening. But anyway, bottom line is, you know, corral Steve Smith. Don't let that guy beat you because you know he's the go-to guy. How many times over the last few years have the Buccaneers went to a game and everybody identified, okay, you can't let this guy beat you, whether it be Steve Smith or DeSean Jackson or whoever it may be, and that guy still goes for 140 yards in a game, all right? Whatever you got to do, take that guy out. You got to take Julio Jones out of the game. You got to take Steve Smith out of the game. If they beat you with the other guys, because we know that the opponents do that with Vincent Jackson, right? That's the guy they fear.
Right.
And they game plan Vincent Jackson. If Mike Evans is going to beat us, let Mike Evans beat us. If Lewis Murphy is going to beat us, as he did in Pittsburgh, let this guy beat us. But Vincent Jackson isn't going to beat us. And Vincent didn't beat him. He caught the winning touchdown pass. But that was only his third catch of the day that game. So, you know, I think, you know, you know, stopping Steve Smith and being stout against the run, but ultimately creating pressure on Flacco, because like any quarterback, if he gets him off of spot, he's known and prone to throw some of those bonehead throws, as a lot of quarterbacks are in the NFL too. There's 1,000 keys to victory, and I don't know which one's the most important one, but to me the most obvious thing is stopping Steve Smith and stopping the running game. And if you lose, let somebody that we don't even know who they are beat us.
You want to see a Torrey Smith show?
Well, yeah. If Torrey beats the Bucks, hats off.
You know, I was fortunate they had me on an ABC show last night called The Plank, and I was talking to Tom Coren and John Sable.
My condolences.
Why the hate? That's brutal.
Oh, sorry. I love Tom Coren.
That's brutal.
I'm just kidding. TK's the best.
And TK,
well, not the best, but he's pretty damn good.
He was actually very – I never worked with him before. He's very entertaining, very knowledgeable. It was a good time.
Dude.
But one of the things they were talking about was we didn't get enough pressure in New Orleans. And anecdotally, I didn't feel that was true. I felt like Gerald McCoy against Jari Evans was getting a tremendous amount of pressure.
Right.
The guy who disappeared again, and I don't know if Skip can hear us, but he's the guy that Skip's been going after aggressively. Michael Johnson, the big free agent, comes in and has just an absolute stinker of a game. What's the word around camp about that?
Mike is pissed. This is a redemption game for him. He talked about that in the locker room this week. He was so focused on thinking about what Drew – try and follow me here, and I'm paraphrasing, and people can go on pewterreport.com and read the story somewhere. I can't even remember which story it's in. But so focused on – thinking about, okay, Drew Brees in this situation is going to step this way. Drew Brees in this situation. He wasn't rushing on instinct, if that makes any sense. That's kind of what I gathered from him. He was worried about technique as far as those things go and being in the right spot. He's calling this a redemption game for him. He's very pissed with the way he played because he said he went back and he looked at the film and he was sick to his stomach when he saw the opportunities that he had to make plays in that game.
Now, was that his decision or was he coached to do that?
No, I think it was his decision, although I think he's not comfortable. They've got him split out a lot wider than he played in Cincinnati, and that is coaches wanting him on that outside edge. You know, two guys. In a,
right.
You watch how far he's lined up, you know, to the right-hand side. I don't know that he's 100% comfortable in that. Look, the guy is still virtually playing on one leg. I mean, his ankle is better, but as good of a game and as a gutsy performance as he had in that Pittsburgh game, because he got banged up again real early in that game on the second drive, where he almost had to come out of the game, but he continued to play the majority of the snaps. As gutsy and as great as that performance was, last Sunday was the exact opposite, and it was a really poor game. You know, hats off to him for realizing that and knowing that he needs to have a redemption-type situation.
It's interesting you point that out. With Michael and with that defensive line in general, and Jimmy Johnson over the chat room, I didn't notice him out that wide, to be honest, real time. I just didn't notice it. I don't doubt it that he was out that wide.
What did Jimmy say? Because If you watch the coach's film from the behind, you know,
yep,
the end zone type thing, you really tend to notice it a little bit more than maybe even on just the television broadcast.
Yeah, and that's the thing I haven't had a chance to do with coming back and doing that stuff. But regardless of where he lined up, it's interesting that they took that tact, right, to try and anticipate, because he's got to perform. You bring him in here, one leg or not, if he's in, he's got to perform.
Well, here's the thing with Brees. We know Brees is not going to really scramble to his left. All right, a right-handed quarterback, not going to scramble where he's throwing really across his body a whole lot. Drew, the whole thing the Saints do, and Gerald McCoy talked about this leading into that game, is they create that pocket where he steps up to make those throws. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To keep a clean inside pocket. He's not great. He tends to make mistakes. When he did move to his left on that one play, that's the interception that he threw to Banks. You know what I mean? So I think maybe they were – but here's the deal. The Saints allow defensive ends to rush up the field and basically take themselves out of the play, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So I think part of him being out a little bit wide so he could take more of an angle to kind of collapse that pocket or that defense – I mean that offensive tackle – back into where the pocket is, as opposed to just running straight up the field if he was lined up, you know, on the outside shoulder of the tackle.
Yeah, the thing that confused me about that, and we'll move back to the Ravens. I know that the people in the chat room are interested in hearing about the Ravens game, which we'll talk about, but
we can't talk about it. We haven't seen it yet. It's so much easier to talk about a game we actually watched.
It is. But what's confusing about this whole mystery about what we're going to do with Drew Brees, he didn't start playing last week. Right, there's no mystery to what Drew Brees likes and doesn't like. He's 6 foot and a half. He likes a clean inside pocket and inside lanes.
And Leslie Frazier said it on that Wednesday or Thursday last week. He says, we've got some ideas. And part of it was to bring Golston inside on a couple of occasions, and he was. Get those long arms up. They knew it was going to be tough to sack the guy, but they were hoping to get more batted balls in the middle there. And if you noticed, Will Golston missed two sacks because he left his feet.
Sure.
He left his feet. And I know it's human nature. He's a young player. If he keeps his feet, he has two sacks in that game. I noticed that looking back at the game again. But Leslie Frazier said, the thing is, we've got some ideas. I'm not going to tell you what they are. We've got a game plan for trying to create some disruption in that pocket. But Leslie made a great point. He said, the teams have been trying to do that Drew Brees' whole career without a whole lot of success. So the Saints know what you're doing. It's nothing new what the Buccaneers did. They haven't seen it a thousand times before. I mean, they have seen it a thousand times before, in other words.
Well, Leslie Frazier certainly has the pedigree. Right now, from a discipline and assignment perspective, things seem to be getting slightly better week on week. What didn't get better throughout this game, and what I'm concerned about, is tackling. Mark Barron had three quarters of pretty doggone good football after having a bad year so far.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to hurt your feelings, Scott, because I know Mark Barron's your man, but good Lord, knuckleheaded terrible so far this year. But three quarters of solid football, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but he forgot he had arms. He looked like Jermaine Phillips trying to tackle out there, and he thought Jacked Up was still on ESPN.
That's fatigue.
Okay, if that's fatigue.
That's fatigue. Look, here's the deal. The guy was in the specific play that I noticed it more importantly on was the touchdown.
The touchdown in overtime?
In overtime.
Yeah.
The guy was barreling in. He was inside the 5-yard line with a head of steam. Your almost only hope at that point is to try and knock the ball loose. You know what I mean? Knock the guy out, fumble the ball. You know, they're going to be first and goal on the 2-yard line if you do make the tackle. Now, granted, you could say, well, then who knows what's going to happen on the next three snaps. Maybe they fumble it. Maybe Brees throws a pick. I understand. Yes, fundamentally, absolutely, you make that tackle. Mark Barron, Leslie Frazier will tell you, and Lovie Smith will tell you, you got to make a tackle there. You can't go for the knockout blow there.
Yeah, the knockout blow has never been my favorite. First of all, you can't get them anymore without a penalty, typically. But your job is to tackle first. If you can make impact, that's great. I'm happy for you. But get the guy on the ground. Give your defense a chance. Every once in a while, these guys are pulling some plays out. You never know what Gerald's going to do.
Yeah.
But regardless, going into this game, tackling, we have had a problem with missed tackles this year. We had a problem with assignments. Now, the middle linebacker position came under a lot of fire as of late by people who I respect who actually watch the games. Dane Fletcher's been struggling to try and get his wits about him in that position. I'm not calling him out because he's been a productive player in the NFL, but he hasn't looked particularly comfortable here. Are we going to see Mason Foster back? Word on the street is he's healthy enough to play. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I think you'll see Mason, and I think you'll see him back calling the defense. And I made this point in our chat earlier today. You can read the transcript on pewterreport.com, but I made this point earlier. Notice that point production after Mason went out. Notice that last drive against the Rams. Was it the Rams that drove? Yeah, Austin Davis, you know, they drove down there. He wasn't on the field on that drive. Notice how many points the Falcons threw up. Notice how many points Pittsburgh scored and how many, you know, how much was open in the middle there. And then notice the 37 points that the Saints scored. They miss Mason Foster. And I know there's a lot of people on our message boards that are not big fans of Mason Foster. And maybe he's not an all-pro middle linebacker, but he's better than anybody on this team right now. Better than Danny Lansana. People are saying, well, put Lansana at middle linebacker. No. Somebody actually said, put Levante David in middle linebacker. No. He can't hold up to that pounding. Greg Schiano told me this last year, and I think I've said this on your show before. There's not an offensive play that's drawn up that the middle linebacker is not blocked.
Absolutely.
Every single play. Levante David, Derek Brooks, those weak side linebackers, they clean up these plays, and a lot of times they're your leading tacklers because they are, I mean, yes, you want a guy to get to him, but again, you've got to get the middle of the field. You've got to get the guy over the center blocked on every single running play.
Absolutely.
And Mason holds up well to that. If his shoulder is well, he's got to play. I think we'll go back to calling the signals. Lavonte David doesn't like calling the defenses. It's he's not a big fan of that.
Well, and you don't like that change, right? And Mason, I know the beef on Mason is coverage is weak. And typically you look at a Mike, that's a bigger linebacker with stiffer hips. It's tough to get back and get to the deep third. We get that. That's a liability
right.
You have. The problem is and I don't know actually how much smaller Dane is. I haven't looked at the bio, right? I'm not sure.
He's smaller.
He looks smaller.
I go a lot of times by looking at him in the locker room, when they're not in full pads and things like that. Dane Smith, Fletcher, is considerably smaller than Mason Foster is. Although Mason is smaller than he was last year. He really leaned out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Weight-wise, he's not a whole lot different, but he really leaned out. Part of that was so he could do exactly what you said, be more agile, be able to be more athletic and get down the middle of the field. Now, here's the deal with Dane, though. Dane's deal is he was a special teamer in New England. Now, he played backup linebacker, and he got into some games when there were some injuries last year. But these are two completely different schemes, what they run in New England and what they ran here in Tampa. Now you're asking this guy to step into a position he's unfamiliar with. Not only that, you give him the green dot where he's calling the plays. You know what I mean? And so you're thinking, not only are you thinking about your assignment, you're making sure you've got everybody in the right spot. And I'm not knocking Dane, but it's just something he struggled with. If he played the position an entire year, would he be better next year than he is this year? Absolutely. But you can't be worrying about next year. You've got to get your guy back that's been doing it since the very first day of OTAs, and that's Mason.
Well, I think everyone's hoping that that's the case, and we're hoping that the defense can actually be a strength again. Intermittently, they are showing up, but they're not being able to do it when it matters, and that's the thing that kills us. At the end of that game, in the old days of the Bucs, you would hope that you could rely on your defense to shut things down. And now we just can't seem to do that. Now, how do the guys look? Give us a health update. You're around one buck. You get to see these things. We had a question earlier from our man, Throgmorton over there. He said, hey, what's up with Mike Evans? Is Mike Evans going to be back in the game? Who are we going to see that hasn't been healthy? Who's getting healthy? And who's dinged up that we may not know about?
Well, I'll just actually just read you the last, the final injury report if you want me to.
Well, anyone can read the injury report. You were there.
Well, I've
got
to look at it. I can't remember everything. I need some sort of point of reference here. Give me a second.
My Lord. All right. Well, he's going to look up the – tell me when you get the injury report.
I can't find it. If I was looking for it, if I wasn't looking for it, it would be the only email I pick up. Here we go. There we go. Banks. This is kind of interesting. Banks hurt his neck at some point. Nobody's really sure exactly where he hurt his neck. But he was limited. He's questionable for the game. Evan Dietrich Smith, he's questionable. He's fine. He was just sick earlier this week. Larry English doesn't really matter at this point. I don't think he's really brought a lot to the table since they brought him back. Mike Evans is questionable. Mason is probable. Deshaun and Casillas are the only two that are out. And Vincent Jackson's questionable. He's got a rib injury. He's questionable for the game. But he's a gamer. He'll go. I think you'll see Vincent. You may not see Evans, but I think you'll see Vincent Jackson. Look, if one of those two guys don't play,
the other one does.
Well, somebody's got to play. One of those two guys have to play if the Buccaneers are going to have a chance of winning this football game.
You know, I almost forgot to mention this. We had an odd sighting in the Saints game. We had a Robert Huron catch.
Yes, after everybody blasted him for that drop. Now, boy, that was a nice burp.
Classy.
Thank you, Wing House Wings. But that was a tough catch. You know what I mean?
He took the end zone?
A shot. No. The one that he dropped earlier.
Yeah,
it was on, and again, that was all set up by another holding penalty that brought him back. You know what I mean?
You know what's funny is,
it was ASJ's stupid face mask call, terribly out of position on the block. Watch that on your all 22.
I don't want to.
I don't want
to see that.
Terribly out of position. Just reaches up and grabs the guy by the head.
You know what's funny, and I don't want to make this a Glennon love fest, but that throw that Huron had a chance for is a hell of a throw.
It's a big time throw.
He put it up there. He gave him a chance. I don't even have a real problem with Huron missing that particular catch. I would have liked him to make it. That's what a good receiver does. He goes and makes those catches. If you watched the game last night, both on the Indy side as well as on the Texan side, when those offenses started to click, it's because the receivers went out and just grabbed the ball.
Right.
Right? And that's what they're supposed to do. You go get the ball. But Huron in the back of the end zone, I saw the ball. I saw Glennon looking his way in the back of the end zone. I was scared to death that he was going to throw it to him. He's wide open. And he made the catch. Now, Let's talk a little.
Wait, real quick about Huron.
Yeah.
The surprising thing is that tough catch where he has to go up high, those are the catches he tended to make. Those easy catches are the ones that usually bounce off his hands. So it's actually a roll reversal.
He's got a little Keyshawn in him, right? Keyshawn would drop the easy ones and make the hard ones, but Huron's just dropped most things. But hopefully he'll improve. And I like what I see out of Lewis Murphy. Lewis Murphy's a gamer. He's trying to make people make him a daily discussion. And it looks as though Mike is getting very comfortable throwing the ball to him. Now, one of the things the Saints ran against us regularly, and I haven't been able to look at the Ravens to determine whether or not I expect to see it from them, but if I had watched the tape on the Bucs, I sure as hell would. Why is it we do not seem to have, even with all the lateral speed this defense has, the ability to stop a basic screen pass?
I think they're out of position. If you go back and look at it, guys are out of position. Now, whether that's a bad luck where Leslie's called a particular defense and a team exploits it, we talk about chess matches all the time. Sometimes it's just going to happen. You're just going to get outcoached at that split second, and it's just bad luck at times. Not even bad coaching, just sometimes just bad luck. But the thing is that I love Levante David, and I'm not being critical of the guy a whole lot. He has a hard time shedding blocks sometimes on those screens. And if you go back and watch it, you'll see a couple of those where he just gets, just driven back 10 yards. You know what I mean? Can't get through there. Part of that is the fact he's just a small guy. He's got to get better at that, and I think he will get better at that. And there are times that he's absolutely great at it. But in this game in particular, he really struggled to get off of blocks there. And there were other guys that came up and didn't make a tackle. You've got, like in college football, they run those wide receiver screens all the time, right, where you got two receivers up top. Quarterback just takes a snap, throws it. The one guy's got to be the blocker. Maybe you've got two guys out there blocking. Quarterback has got to fight through that block to disrupt it, to at least slow the guy down. The Buccaneers defenders don't do a good job, particularly in those screen plays, of fighting off those double teams sometimes and at least clogging things up because they're allowing these guys. And another thing that we've noticed with this team is the defensive ends are just not very good at keeping outside contained. Thank God Seattle Seahawks are not on this schedule this year. Could you imagine Russell Wilson running those boots against this defense right now? It would be just as bad as the Washington game the other night. Was it Washington? I can't even remember who it was, but the guy had, what do you have, 113 yards rushing in that game?
But what's amazing about that is how much the defensive staff preached that in training camp, and I assume in the offseason, right? And it was the same thing in Coach Chiano's defense, to be honest.
They struggled.
You've
with
got
that.
To own the edge. Yep. There is no option. You have to own that edge.
Right.
Now, part of that, I think, is some of the stunts we run. Now, we're not stunting like we did with Chiano, but we're still running a lot of tech stunts.
Sure.
And when you run a tech stunt, obviously you're going to have some issues depending on when they make their twist inside.
Right.
That said, someone still has that responsibility. So if you're coming back, if you're coming from the inside out, you better damn well get to that outside shoulder and get to the edge.
Yeah. And I'll say in the second half, they tend to do a little bit better when Breeze rolled out. In the first half, he had guys just wide open when he ran that boot. You know what I mean? Whether it be a tight end or running back, whoever it was. In the second half, they did a little bit better. Golson was a little bit more disciplined in that. But again, there, I mentioned that earlier. A couple of those plays where if he keeps his feet, he probably sacks Breeze. Or at least the completions don't happen on those plays. So, anyway.
I'm sorry. I was distracted by someone standing on a chair in the wing house.
Yeah.
So I want to remind folks out there, now most of the people who are in the chat room actually are international folks as well, but we are here at the Tampa Wing House. I want to thank the girls for taking care of everybody here.
It's only a $900 flight.
You know, and we have some people that made the flight. Our friends from the UK are over at the table over there, which is great. We attract people from all over the world to come to Wing House because of us. No. It's the waitresses.
No, it's the waitresses. And I just have to just compliment this staff again. And good news is my wife isn't listening, so I can say it, but the talent here is absolutely amazing. And I've been to every wing joint in the Tampa Bay area multiple occasions. This is the tops.
And this is our home.
And
those two things are not accidental.
If it wasn't 9 hours from my house, I would be here a lot more.
It's only 9 hours because you ride a bike. All right, let's get to brass tacks. Against the Ravens, predictive MVPs on offense and defense, Mark. Who do you think is going to show up this week, thereby cursing them to have an atrocious game?
I'm going to say Luke Stalker. He is going to be a force. That way, if he's wrong, you know, who cares? You know what I mean? No one cares.
See, no love for Luke Stalker. You need to give my man some burn. Luke Stalker will turn some heads if you give him a chance.
Luke is nasty this year.
He's
committed
so
a couple penalties this year and mistakes, but
I would have put him at guard before I put Garrett Gilkey.
I totally agree. And I love Garrett Gilkey. He's one of the nicest guys
you'll meet
in that locker
room. I'm
sure
he's nice. My mom was nice, too. I'm not putting her on the offensive line.
Well, my mom, I would. She's meaner than a snake. But bottom line is he's got some nasty to him. No, that's not my predictive MVP of the offense. I'm gonna go Glennon here. I think Glennon makes it 3 for 3 with a strong game again. And I think if they win this football game, it's going to be because of the arm of Mike Glennon. Because I don't think they're going to run the football very well again.
If they don't run the football well, we are doomed.
No,
we have got to.
Didn't run the ball well against Pittsburgh.
I don't mean that we're going to lose the game. Right. I mean as a team.
You've certainly backed yourself into a corner if you can't run the football.
It's unacceptable at this level to not be able to block so that you can run. That, and this is the part that kills me, because I have such respect for the coaching staff they've assembled. But the things we're doing poorly are not on the players at this level. It's on the coaches. You pick the wrong guys, right? Or you are just incapable of teaching them things. I've had kids in high school that I could teach how to zone block.
Right.
Right. I agree that it's harder in a lot of ways, but they know. They get where they're supposed to. Our guys are just completely wrong. Just wrong.
Right.
Either they are the dumbest set of offensive linemen ever assembled, which I don't believe is true.
Right.
Or they are being taught incorrectly, which is more likely. And I don't know which one it is, but by God, we better fix it, because I don't care if you put Barry Sanders back there, he's going to get beat up behind this offensive line. I agree with you on the Glennon call, and I am not a Glennon fan, but this kid has impressed the hell out of me. That Saints game, I was absolutely shocked with some of the accuracy he had on the ball.
Yeah.
Whatever that fundamental is, and I talk to the guys in What the Buck about this all the time, because everyone says he has such a strong arm. He has an intermittently strong arm. There are times when, and I don't know whether it's his footwork, what it is, there's something he doesn't do in his delivery, and the velocity drops by like 25%.
Sure.
He has seemed to correct that as of late, and he is putting a lot of mustard on the ball,
right,
and he's throwing a very accurate pass. I think the kid's doing a great job.
Something that he's done that people say all the time, they should have went with Glennon the whole time, he should have been started from day one. I'm just telling you, if you watched what these coaches watched every single day in OTAs and in the early part of training camp, Josh McCown clearly.
It wasn't close.
Clearly outplayed Mike Glennon.
It was
Mike
not
Glennon
even close.
Mike was checking down. Mike Glennon was making, you know, bonehead errors. He was throwing balls in the dirt at times. He looked lost. But for whatever reason, he's kind of figured things out a little bit. And you know what part of that is? It's confidence. And Mike Glennon, you know, is gaining confidence. And that's so huge as a quarterback.
He is.
Don't point that back to me. Point that back at her.
I tried to put it on Jackie. She didn't want it. I'm going to get a better angle. There we go. Our fans out there.
Oh, my goodness.
See, look
at
that.
I can't even function now.
We've got people on the internet. I wonder what they're doing. They're probably just eating.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so Glennon on the defensive side, we
good
agree.
Good news is this is recorded, so I can go home and watch it.
You can
right?
go home and watch it, absolutely.
Good. What point is this, like the 43-minute mark?
Actually, we're almost done. We're at 55 in.
All right.
So Glennon on the offensive side. On the defensive side, who's going to show up?
I think Levante David is going to continue. I think Levante David turned a big corner last week. 14 tackles, had a splash play, 2 tackles for loss. You know, I don't think he's played bad this year, but I don't think he's looked very comfortable. I think he looked more comfortable in this game last week against the Saints than he has all along, and I think that's only going to continue. So I'm going to say Levante David. I know that's an easy pick, but I really think this guy is going to blow up and have a big impact game. Whether it be a sack, whether it be an interception, something's going to happen with Levante David that's going to make a difference in this game.
Well, my pick is even simpler, much more simpler, the most simplest. It's Gerald McCoy. This guy he's two players. He plays with one hand, it doesn't matter. He goes against Jari Evans, it doesn't matter. I think that Gerald McCoy will almost single-handedly elevate the defense. Now, I agree, Levante is going to do well. I think the defense is going to step up, but I think right now, at some point, and you hear these guys in the locker room. You see what these guys do behind the scenes. At some point, their pride has to come in. And you watching that film, the end of that game, that collapse as a defense, they had to be sick to their stomach. And if anyone's going to try and bang the drum to get them moving forward, I think it has to be Gerald McCoy. Or are there other leaders in there that we may not know about? How about a little peek behind the curtain?
That's something that concerns me, Derek. That's something that concerns me about this football team. And we saw it in that meltdown with the offense.
Yep.
Where's the guy on the sideline, a defensive guy that goes to the offense, an offensive guy that goes to the defense? Where's that fire? Where's that nastiness? Where's that Warren Sapp type guy?
Hardy Nickerson, he's on the sideline.
Give
him a helmet.
That's something that does concern me. Again, one of the reasons why I thought Lovie should take the timeout, not because they're going to get backed up another yard because of the delay of game. That had nothing to do with it. Regroup, tell your guys, this is it. This is where you man up. This is where we're going to win or lose this football game. You know what I mean? We can't allow a safety here. We've got to be able to, before that drive, when the crowd's getting back into it, the Saints had just went down and scored. The crowd was back into that football game. That's where, and maybe they did do this, but I want to know who that guy is, whether it be a coach, whether it be a player, who takes these guys aside and say, this is it. This is what we've been working our asses off since January, right?
Yep.
This is what every minute in that locker room, sweating during the offseason, doing our off-season conditioning and training. Every bit of that, this is what it's about right now. Maybe that's a Rocky moment. I don't know.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
it
I
is.
Watch too many movies.
I'm getting me excited over here. I'm not kidding.
But
it's Jackie.
I tell my
it's one
son
of the
that,
two.
Well, that goes without saying. By the way, I cannot, never mind. I'm not even going to say that. I know this is PG-13, but that just, I just crossed the line.
Oh, my
in
God.
In my mind, so I won't say it. But anyway, go ahead. So that's, you know, where's that Rocky moment? You know what I mean? Where's that man up and we're going to make a difference? Where's that Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks in a hotel room in San Diego in 1996? Saying,
no more.
That spit stops here.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Someone's got to do it. So on the defensive side, you've got Levante. I've got Gerald McCoy. All right, let's go with our prediction. The last thing going on here. Hold on. There's some good quality love going on there. Make sure the guys see all that stuff that's going on. Harley and Jackie sitting here keeping us company. Harley's giving her a back rub. In my head, they have pillow fights. Yeah, this is Harley and Jackie.
They have pillow fights in yoga pants.
Yoga pants. Leave it to Mark to make
by
it
by the
dirty.
Way, the greatest invention in the 21st yoga century
pants?
Is yoga pants.
I never wear them. I find them very uncomfortable.
You know what? You would look good in a pair of yoga pants. Well, people say there should be a weight limit. I totally disagree.
I totally
anybody
disagree.
Anybody in yoga pants is
I would
great.
Rock some yoga pants. Yes. Predictions. Your prediction for the game.
Gosh. I haven't made it yet. I haven't really thought about it yet.
Well, think about it, man. Put you on the spot.
Wow. I'm going to go Bucks lose a close one, 24-23. I still think there's a good chance they win this football game, but I want to see it. I want to see another Pittsburgh game. I want to see another clutch performance when they're down, their backs against the wall, they're able to do it.
I don't have a lot of official roles, but at this moment, from a Bucks fan's perspective, I always pick the Bucks, and it always has to come with caveats. They have to do X, Y, and Z in order to be competitive, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say the hell with all that. The pieces, parts are there, and that's one of the things I think is frustrating when you start looking at it. We've done everything well intermittently, right? And I think that Rocky moment you're looking for, Mark, that Rocky moment you're looking for on the day that the whole place should be pink, but because of some ridiculous merchandising, they weren't able to put it together. I think the Bucks put it all together at home. And they beat the crap out of the Ravens.
Wow.
I mean, literally beat the crap out of them. I'm talking 37-14.
Well, I'm speechless at this point. I don't know that there's many people that are going to agree with you on that.
No one.
I would like to see it. It makes my job much easier to walk into a happy locker room. I have not walked into a happy Buccaneer locker room since December 8th of last year. I'm going on 10 months of not walking into a winning locker room. Because I didn't go to Pittsburgh.
You didn't go to Pittsburgh, right. Yeah. I think this is the week. And they may not do it as convincingly as I think they can. But I think this offense, what's interesting, and the reason I pick it is, I think the defense is going to do well enough to defend the situation. I think this offense is starting to click. I think Arroyo's getting more comfortable. I think, Glenton is getting incredibly more comfortable. I think they're going to put points up. And you see how points can come in bunches. You get a defensive score. All of a sudden, this thing starts happening. I think this is the week it all comes together. And I think you have that with a coach like Smith, where it's going to be a war of attrition with him. He's got to get guys to buy in. He's got to get guys to believe, to trust, do their damn jobs.
Right.
And right now, it's one or two guys not doing their job, and everything falls apart. I think the day they start doing, they actually do their job for all them minutes, big things can happen. Now, we still have the thin issue with injuries, et cetera, but I think this is the week. I think we're going to be, as Buck fans, very excited at Raymond James Stadium this week.
Well, I hope you're right because, I'm looking forward to going into a happy locker room and not one of those where you're like, oh, crap, I got to go ask Anthony Collins a question. He looks like he's ready to rip everyone's head off.
Well, I'd like him to rip some defensive players' heads off.
By the way, Anthony Collins, I think, has played pretty good. Not great, all right? He's had some errors. But for the talent that he's faced, and I think he's given up officially, been credited with giving up one sack so far this year. It's not a bad job by this guy. But I will say this, and I think I wrote about it maybe on PeterReport.com, but after that Rams game, this guy was literally, here's a behind-the-scenes look for you, literally could not talk to me because he was so emotionally devastated. He literally had tears, not just watery eyes.
Right.
Literally had tears. For 15 minutes after that game, he went to the back of the locker room, sat on a box, and was literally shaking. He was so angry. And you know what? I take my fan hat off in this job. It's what I have to do. But I also put myself in a fan spot, and I was thinking to myself, that's what I like to see. I don't like to see Adam Hayward cutting up in the locker room after a loss with Dakota like we saw last year. I don't like to see Josh Freeman nonchalantly, smiling as he's shaking the quarterback's hand after they get their asses kicked. I like to see a guy like Anthony Collins who is furious at that loss. Again, he's not Pro Bowl caliber by any stretch right now, but I thought he's played pretty well this year. But here's a guy who gives a damn. He got the payday, but he still gives a damn. And I like his attitude a lot. So there's a little glimpse of what goes on.
You know, and I think fans love to see that. I'm not as moved by it necessarily. I think fans love to see it. Everyone handles defeat differently. And the reality is sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. I like to see it sometimes. I think it's a good story. I liked when in training camp or preseason when we were talking about, everyone was talking about bringing in Richie Incognito, and EDS is like, hey, we've got our guys.
Right.
I like to see that inward-facing thing. But this, I think, all goes back to this thing that maybe it is a Rocky moment. Maybe we're making a mountain out of a molehill about this. Maybe this is something that movies have taught us have to exist. But we've been in locker rooms. We've seen it happen.
Right.
You have to have a galvanizing moment when you stop looking out and start looking in and say, listen, no one's going to give us this game. We always talk about keys to the game. What do we have to do against the Ravens or against the Falcons or against the Saints? None of that matters. You can look inside right now. You block, you tackle, you score. It's all about what you do. Damn all the rest of it.
You're absolutely right. This team does not understand how to win yet.
Nope.
They won in the Pittsburgh game. But let's take the holdover from last year, all right, the poor year. This team, you can almost get used to losing. You can almost get good.
Yeah, you can get a culture of it, absolutely.
To playing pretty good. Man, we almost won that game. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But at some point, you got to man up. You got to make it happen. You got to have that Rocky moment. And maybe this is the week that does it. And I think this would be a great week to do it because these players then have a week off. All right? They're going to come back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in practice. I just got the schedule. Then they're off Thursday through Sunday. So they're going to have four straight days off to go relax, fly down to Jamaica if they want to, go back home, see mom and dad, whatever it is that they're going to do. Get away from football for a little bit and get back on the second half of the season. So I think if they could get this win here, I think it's really huge for this team to be able to do that.
Well, I certainly would like to see that. I think the teams do need those breaks, and hopefully they'll get them. I want to thank Mark Cook from Pewter Report coming out here. Check out all of his articles, as well as Scott Reynolds and the whole team at Pewter Report at pewterreport.com. I want to thank all the folks who came to the restaurant. I know it was hard
great
to hear. We had a
tonight.
Nice crowd. It was very loud. We got people from all over the world here, which is great. The girls have been doing a terrific job. Make sure you take care of the girls. Pay your rent. You've been here the whole time. We're going to stay around and have some drinks, have some food. Talk Bucks football. Who knows?
Ogles will be.
Mark's leaving. He came late. He'll leave early. That's the way he does, but that's okay. That's okay. He's got important things to do at home, but we're going to hang out here for a little while.
Actually, I'll hang out for a little bit.
If you're coming to the game, you know where to go. 3316 West Ohio, the best tailgate in Tampa, the only Hall of Fame tailgate.
I've heard it's awesome.
If you could
one
just
of these days,
wobble your lazy ass over there, you'd see.
Again, you guys don't understand. I mean, you're practically, your tailgate's in Ybor City compared to where I park at. So, you know.
So park somewhere else.
I'm carrying a 97-pound computer.
Jesus
Christ. I'm wearing socks, you know, which I never wear. I actually have to wear like a button-up shirt. It's 98 degrees outside. I'm 44.
All I'm hearing is crying.
By the way, my birthday is coming up October 26th, in case anybody cares. I will set up a PayPal account for donations. To the Cook Family Fund?
Good Lord.
No?
Cook's asking for donations for his birthday. I don't know if you guys heard that or not. It's pathetic over here.
Well, people don't know me that well. They don't know what to buy. So why
so
give certificates?
Give the gift
fine.
That keeps on giving. Give cash.
Cash works.
No, one other thing I do want to mention is...
Or hugs from waitresses.
Yeah, you didn't sound too creepy at all there, did you?
Front hugs. Very tight front. Long.
Long, lingering front hugs.
Front hugs.
Now, one thing we are going to do, not this week, but the next home game against the Vikings... The Bucks are not allowed to do throwback games because of some ridiculous rule the
NFL
has established.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Other teams had throwback games last year. They used different helmets. What the
if they
is
did
going
use
on?
A different helmet, then you have a beef. Most of them that I saw used the same helmet because it was the same color, and you can change the decals.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Or they used the alternate helmet, and no one noticed because
why can't they just fit them at the beginning of the year with the throwback helmet?
Because it's a dumb rule. Because players use different helmets. It makes no sense. The player safety argument is complete crap.
If you're the little screw that holds your face mask on,
yeah.
If that bracket breaks, which happens all the time,
oh, yeah.
they throw another helmet on you.
Then
that one wasn't fitted before the
It is complete crap. It's a complete crap argument, and I love this game more than any sport in the world. I think it's the best sport going. It's not even a question.
Except bowling.
Except for, well, obvious exception to bowling.
Right.
But... There's another thing I'm going to talk about totally off topic because we're here and we have microphones and so people have to listen to us.
But wait, don't we have to get off the air before the Jim Rome show?
Oh, wait, we don't.
We can do what
Jim Rome
do.
Can. Anyway, this week we saw a couple of things that absolutely made my head spin. You've got the cut block or the chop block that could have ended the guy's career.
Yep.
What did that cost him? $8,600. Anyone keeping track? $8,600 for that block, which was absolutely dirty. Was it the dirtiest play in football, as the coach accused? No. Was it dirty? Yes. $8,600. Kaepernick comes to a press conference in pink Beats by Dre.
Right.
What did that cost him? $10,000.
Right.
Lewis Murphy shouts some expletive in the end zone on a celebration. What did that cost him? 11 and change.
Don't even get me started on the NFL is cutting their legs out from underneath. I don't give a. They right now they're the high and mighty, right?
Oh yeah.
They just are making. They could just bury money out back in New York, right? Dig a hole, bury it. They don't even need it. I'm telling you, these are the things that eventually ends up turning fans off.
Absolutely.
And I'm talking about these ridiculous penalties. And I'll tell you something else that pissed me off. And I said it in the chat today because the NFL can't find me. The officiating in that game, and it's not sour grapes because I don't technically have a horse in this race. It was ridiculous. It was horrible. You're telling me in 86 plays, there was not a hold?
No, never.
By the Saints offensive
line? Never. Never. Even the ones where they had jersey with both hands and chains.
I was going to say, Gerald McCoy.
Oh, Jesus.
All of the defensive linemen probably had to get fitted with new jerseys this week because their necks are stretched out. I mean, and the consistency from crew to crew blows my mind. You watch a game on Thursday night, and it's completely different. They're calling completely different penalties. Here's the deal. How about this? We're going to call Anthony Collins offsides or illegal formation because his head isn't even with the guard's belt line. And the commentator said they made it a point
of emphasis
this week. How about the fact that there was no penalty called on McCown's interception? That was a point of emphasis the entire preseason, that they screwed up the preseason throwing a damn flag every time a guy farted near another guy.
Yep.
And then once the season starts, you don't see that nearly as much. Now, the penalties are up, but they're still not calling the way they did in the preseason.
Mark, what you don't understand is everything is fine. There's nothing to see here. Mike Pereira came on and said that all the calls were perfect.
That guy.
Mike Pereira. What a douche. Joke. All right.
At least CBS has Mike. Who's the other guy?
I don't know. I want Ed Hockley because I want him to bust someone's neck.
He's a good-sized young
man. He's not small. Speaking of not small,
yeah,
we're going to get out of here. We're going to get out of here. See,
hello.
Those transitions, you normally pay extra for that shit. Sorry.
You notice that was the only thing that Skip paid attention to.
It is. It's the only thing he paid attention to. All right, I want to thank everyone for coming out. Like I said, let's get some food. Let's get some drinks. Let's have a good time. Let's get up for the game this Sunday. Make sure you're out of the tailgate. Mark, thanks again for everything you do and for coming out again. Thank you, Jackie, for taking care of us and for walking around periodically, making the scenery much, much better. Until our next What the Pewter Report podcast, which will be sometime next month, we'll figure it out. We'll let you guys know. We'll be back on air Wednesday next week for What the Buck. So for Mark Cook and PewterReport.com, for myself and WhatTheBuck.net, we are out of here. No music. We're going to eat and drink.